Well, there's the fanfare. That means it is time to check in with our in-house movie critic, Matt Olien. Matt, thanks as always for joining us.
You bet, Ashley.
So you have seen a couple of films. Let's start with Nomadland. This sounds really interesting.
It's very interesting. It is doing very well right now in critics' awards that are starting to filter out New York, LA film critics, Chicago film critics. It's doing very well. It's directed by Chloe Zhao, who really hit it big a couple years ago in the film festival circuit with a movie called The Rider. And this is a beautifully done film with great landscapes of the desert Southwest. The landscapes almost become a character, almost like the desert became a character in Lawrence of Arabia. Frances McDormand plays a, let's say, later career woman, and it gets hard to find jobs. She's worked at a company in Nevada for years. The company closes down. The town actually closes down. And she becomes a nomad. She works for Amazon. She drives around the desert Southwest living with other people that live in kind of these RV parks, kind of nomads. The film takes place in late 2011, right before the economy started to really come out of the Great Recession. And so that's a real backstory of the film, is kind of how people are forgotten in this economy. What do people do? How do they survive? How do they make money? And she has chosen this kind of lifestyle rather than relocate or find another job in a town. And so that's what the film's about. And I think what makes this a fascinating movie is Chloe Zhao really infects the film. She imbues the film in kind of this modern sensibility of, what are nomads? Have we always been nomads? Is this a normal kind of existence? Have we been taught by modern society that you need a roof over your head, you need a house? There's a fascinating scene in the film where McDormand kind of goes off on this realtor friend of her sister's about selling people houses they can't afford. So there's a lot of underlying things going on there about our economy, what's expected, how do we term success in the United States of America in 2011 when the film takes place. McDormand is great. Very much of an underplayed performance. It's not a showy performance like she gives us in Fargo or Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. She fits in with all the non-professional actors. And that's another thing, Ashley, that Chloe Zhao does. She uses non-professional actors in most of the parts, except for the Frances McDormand part and David Strathairn, who's the only other name actor in the movie. And you get the feeling you're watching real nomads in front of a camera, and she's directed them well. Their acting is perfectly naturalistic, and McDormand kind of fits in with them, which shows that she's not a typical Hollywood actress. Frances McDormand is able to kind of fit in with these non-professional actors to a point where her performance is very naturalistic, the same natural style that the non-professionals are using. One of the best films of the year that I've seen. Certainly it's going to be a contender for Best Picture. And McDormand's going to be right up there again, trying for her third Best Actress Oscar.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept to have a multiple Academy Award-winning actress and then several people who not just haven't won an Oscar but aren't working professionals.
Yeah, they're not professionals. And it's seamless. It's really seamless. The scene she has with these folks, McDormand can downplay. She can dial it back. She doesn't have to play Marge Gunderson in Fargo, which is, I still think, her best performance. But it feels very natural. And choices are made in this movie. I'm not going to give away plot points, of course, but, you know, choices have to be made along the way. Things happen. Is she going to continue this life? What is her life going to be like without her husband, without the job she always had, without the town she knew in Nevada? And people have to make choices every day about economics, lifestyle, and that's really what the film was about. And I think it probably plays well in 2020 as well, because
right.
You know, this has been a strange year. People have worked at home. People have lost their jobs. What, 20-some restaurants have closed in the Fargo-Moorhead area alone in the last 9 months through no fault of their own. What are people going to do? What are people going to do that were waitresses at these restaurants or people that invested money in these businesses? And so that's really what the film is about, is these choices people have to make economically and how they can survive. And it really resonates with what we've gone through this year.
Well, you watched one film that has a lot of critical buzz and one film that's likely bigger on sort of the box office, big blockbuster sort of thing, at least in a normal year. It would be Wonder Woman 1984. If I recall, the first film was set in World War One. Why is this called 1984 and still set in a wartime?
That's a great question, and the film doesn't really answer that, and that was one of my problems with the sequel. The first Wonder Woman, I will say, Gal Gadot, perfectly cast as Diana Prince, takes place in World War One. Chris Pine, you know, plays her boyfriend, pilot, and that all worked. It was kind of an innocent DC Comics movie that really kind of surprised people. This one seems almost unnecessary, and there is not a lot of backstory about why Diana Prince is in 1984. Why she's working at this this museum where they analyze rocks and ancient ruins and things like that. The plot involves something called a wishing stone, which is discovered, and Diana Prince is analyzing it. Kristen Wiig shows up from Saturday Night Live fame as kind of a newly hired geologist who's fascinated by these things. But it's called a wishing stone, and people make wishes, and all heck breaks loose when people make wishes in this movie. But you make a good point, Ashley. There's really no reason why this is set in 1984. Yeah, there's some funny fish out of water things going on, especially when Chris Pine shows up, whose most recent memory of things was with Wonder Woman in World War One. So some of that plays well, but it almost seems like, well, I can't tell you why he shows up, but you know, suffice it to say, this is a comic movie. So there's going to be all kinds of fantastic elements. Diana Prince kind of lives her own life in 1984, laying low. She only springs into action with her powers when needed to. So some of it works. It was fun to go see a movie in a theater again. I saw it in the theater, and there was like, you know, six people at the theater. It's also streaming. So Warner Brothers and DC are kind of hedging their bets that no one is going to theaters right now by also having it streamed. So we're not sure what the box office take's going to look like in these COVID times. The final 20 minutes or so just become this sloppy, sentimental, too much messaging montage that goes on and on and on, and it almost ruins the whole movie. Pedro Pascal plays the villain in the movie. Kristen Wiig, villain, helper, what is she? You'll have to go see the movie to find that out. But overall, I think this was a disappointment compared to the first one.
All right. Well, we do have a trivia question for you. Wonder Woman is a DC character, and so is Superman. And so I want to go back to the 1978 Superman, so the 1979 Oscars, nominated for 4 and won 1.
I will say visual effects is the Oscar it won.
Yes. Do you want to go for what it was nominated?
Yes, I would say it was nominated for Best Score, John Williams, correct? Let's go with cinematography.
Nope.
Sound
mixing.
And how about film editing?
Film editing. There we go. We've been to the movies with Matt Olien.